Baron Al climbed from the wreck, still stunned by the impact of the crash, to come face to face with Tad Hutter, who had clambered from the wreckage of his own wag. Tulk had been chilled and impaled on the remains of the steering column, the dark metal protruding out of his back where the impact had driven it through his chest after the steering wheel had sheared off. He had died at peace with a certain knowledge that his hated Baron wouldn't be getting out of this conflict alive.
Chuggins, what the fuck are you playing at?
Hutter leveled his blaster. Baron Al looked at him with surprise, as though he couldn't quite believe what he was seeing or hearing.
Me?
Asshole.
Hutter raised the blaster.
No! Leave him! He's mine! What?
Carell was charging across the open space, oblivious of the carnage and blaster shots that sprayed across his path. He had his saber raised, and was upon the startled Jorgensen before the Baron had a chance to move.
We've waited so long for this, you pox-riddled bastard, but at last you'll pay!
The saber chopped through Jorgensen's flesh and bone, scoring nerves and gouging out muscle, so that great gouts of blood streamed from his body. Jorgensen realized too late what was happening to him, and went down under the frenzied attack. Hutter raised his blaster to chill the mad dog, and also to put Jorgensen out of his misery, but his sole attempt at charity for the Baron was stopped by two streams of blaster fire. Oh! Jenny and Rudy had heard their leader cry out and wanted him to achieve his revenge without interruption. But in their single-minded desire, they had neglected to watch their backs and found themselves open to blaster fire from those few Sekhmen who had decided that they should keep a watch on their Baron. Carell was now in a world of his own, the chaos and carnage around him failing to register in his addled brain. For Joseph Carell, the only thing that mattered was that his hated enemy was under his blade.
I got you, you depraved fuck!
Carell raised his head to the skies, clouded as they were with smoke, sand, and the smell of destruction. He looked over to where some of Jorgensen's Sekhmen had emerged from the mists.
Oh, shit.
Carell was kept on his feet by the force of the bullets ripping into him. The mysterious box fell open, its contents revealed. The charred, mummified remains of Carell's wife tumbled from the box and fell on the mutilated remains of her tormentor, followed closely by Carell's corpse. The battle was over. Now it was just a question of who would get out alive. Dean, Jack, and Danny backtracked through the sandstorm and smoke, each with his blaster at the ready, in search of a wag that could be used to get them out of the arena. Doc followed, bringing Aisha with him, but Ryan held back.
What is it, lover?
JB and Mildred, we need to find them. They won't know where we are.
They might if they saw Carell. They knew he was in our wag, and they'd probably guess which direction to take.
That's a lot of maybes. I've got to try and find them.
In this? We could wander forever and still not find them.
Still got to try. Let's do it.
Well, Ryan and Christy set off to try to find JB and Mildred. The other five in the group were making their way toward the rear of the convoy in search of a wag they could use.
Shit, Dean. I'll be glad when we get the hell out of here.
No one get in our way. Get close, chill quick and quiet. No one guess where we are.
You don't know how much I hope so.
The party of five had been lucky so far. The main hand-to-hand was taking part toward the middle of the desert floor, where the Hellbenders had rushed to take on the Sekhmen as they emerged from their wags. So getting back as far as the rear of the convoy was a matter of keeping eyes and ears open and staying close to the wall. Jack, Dean, and Doc knew their respective strengths and fighting skills, but Aisha and Danny were still unknown quantities, so they didn't want to risk conflict unless it was absolutely necessary. The last charity wag was nothing more than a personnel carrier, closed in with welded sheet metal and a few slots cut in the side for blasters to be pushed through. The slots were empty, and there were four people engaged in hand-to-hand combat around it, with as many corpses between them. Forced up close by the poor visibility, these three men and one woman were fighting full-on, trying to get their hand blasters into a position where they could get a clear shot. Jack looked at Dean.
You take those two.
Jack indicated a woman and man, one of whom Dean recognized as a hellbender near the wag. He then pointed to two men who were careering across the desert floor, locked in a deadly embrace, the only outcome of which could be one of them buying the farm.
And I take Dan.
Both of them would buy the farm if Jack had anything to do with it. The albino hunter slipped through a cloud of dust and was up behind the grappling men. Even in the dull light, the leaf-bladed knife was an arc of gleaming steel as it cut through flesh and artery. The knife then caught the second man on the downstroke. The entire chilling had taken only a few seconds, in which time Dean had slipped through the smoke and approached the other fighting couple. He had the high power in his hand. The two combatants were so engrossed in their own struggle that they didn't notice the younger Carter approach them stealthily. Dean loosed two shots at less than 3 yards. Both were aimed for the head of each fighter, and in less than a second, both struck home. The two combatants hit the desert floor.
Doc, Danny, Aisha, come on.
As they joined the pair, Jack and Dean were checking that the wag was empty. There was a corpse in the front, which Jack pulled out and discarded on the desert floor.
Now where have Christy and Dad got to?
The one-eyed man and the red-haired beauty were in fact making their way toward the center of the arena in search of JB and Mildred. With a sandstorm and the smoke that filled the area, it was easy to avoid hand-to-hand combat. Ryan and Christy had no problem dodging around the skirmishes and kept a sharp view for JB and Mildred. And those two were following much the same pattern. JB and Mildred had figured that Ryan and Christy were likely to be in the direction that Carell had emerged from, so they were battling their way through the chaos to try to locate their comrades, dodging the skirmishes that were taking place. When the two couples nearly ran into each other coming out of a bank of swirling sand, all four had their blasters raised.
Gaia, damn it!
Oh, shit!
Oh, Dark Knight, thought we'd never find you.
Yeah, what took you so long?
Funny.
Well, the others are back this way, securing a wag. Let's go.
The four companions made their way back across the battlefield, sticking to the outer edge of the arena to make quicker progress and avoid conflict. By the time they arrived at the wag, Jack had gotten the machine going, and the engine was ticking over.
John Barrymore, my dear doctor, we had some doubt over whether we would ever see you again.
It'll take more than this for you to be rid of me, you old buzzard.
Go, Jack!
The albino hunter wasted no time. Putting the wag into reverse, he roared back toward the arena entrance and away from the other wags. In the dismal light, he put the vehicle into a skid and turned it so that he could hit the entrance head-on and get out of the war zone. As they broke through the almost solid wall of sand that was swirling at the entrance, where the storm was forcing its way through the restricted gap, the air suddenly became clearer, vision less impaired.
Where you want me to stop?
I don't.
But I thought...
Yeah, we were gonna regroup and evaluate, but that's all changed. That cold hard hell in there is just gonna sort itself out in its own time. We need to head back to the redoubt, see what happens then.
Then I drive.
They pulled away from the arena of the dead and dying, and headed back for the Hellbender's deserted base. The redoubt was eerily quiet when they reached the base. They parked the wag, showered wearily, and prepared food and drink in a subdued manner, hardly speaking. It was only when they were seated in the now all-too-empty meeting room that Aisha spoke.
Do you think any of the others will get back?
I doubt it. They were ready to fight to the death, like their leader. Carell was that fanatical, and he instilled that in all of them. Even if a few of them survive the slaughterhouse, I doubt they'll have the strength left to get back, even if they get any of the wags going.
But we owe it to them to wait.
They left it for 2 days, using the time to rest and recuperate. Ryan and JB scoured the redoubt for any armory materials that had been left behind, of which there were few. Mildred and Christy had better luck with the med lab supplies, while Doc and Jack squabbled good-naturedly over the self-heat and food and drink supplies. Dean, meanwhile, joined Danny and Aisha in starting to explore the old tech that was in the redoubt. To the few things the young men had been able to teach each other, Aisha was able to add a little from what she had picked up watching her father. It didn't take any of them much farther, and Dean soon lost heart about being able to crack the secrets of the CD-ROM in their possession, but it was a step in the right direction. Dean also noticed something developing between Danny and Aisha that made what happened a few days later no big surprise.
I figure it's pretty clear that no one's coming back. And I also figure our chance of getting any of that old tech is pretty much gone as well. There isn't enough here for all of us to survive. So I reckon we get a good night's rest, get it together in the morning, then jump through the Metrans.
Huh,
That should be interesting to see.
I take it you're not coming with us. Danny shook his head, then looked at Aisha.
No. There's a lot here for us to find out. Then maybe we'll try a jump and see what happens. Or maybe just go back to Charity and see if we can get at the rest of the old tech. But seeing as you'll be gone and there'll be food and water to spare, maybe we'll just stay here for a while, out of harm's way.
Shame. I'll kind of miss you.
Same here, buddy.
The two boys hugged, pounding each other's backs heartily.
I guess I'll miss you too, but this is something we need to do for ourselves.
Parting is such sweet sorrow.
Doc took Aisha's hand and kissed it.
The origin of that phrase is half a millennium old, but the sentiment remains constant.
You are one weird old guy, but I do like you.
The next morning, the companions were gathered in the Matrans unit to enter the chamber and jump, ready for whatever fate may throw at them next. Having made their goodbyes, they turned and entered. Dean was the last, and as he did, he stopped and turned back to Danny.
Remember, as soon as the mechanism locks, then the comp starts charting the course. Never been able to stand outside and see it, but if you watch, it may teach you something. And maybe one day our paths will cross again and you'll be able to tell me.
Bet on it.
Dean's last view of Danny and Aisha was as he closed the door. He could tell that they were already poring over the comp console, watching intently for the mechanism to go into action. The boy seated himself with some regret on the chamber floor and watched as the white curling mist began to rise from the circular discs inset into the chamber's floor and ceiling. And he and his companions stood poised on the verge of another leap into the unknown.